Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We've been around 20 years. We're always buying and selling all forms of rare coins, precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. We offer the highest rated privately held depository service in the Northwest United States and beyond. We've sustained. We've made it through 20 years of all kinds of stuff in the industry. And we've seen people come. We've seen people go. We've seen people that look to be big and important disappear. Northwest Territorial Mint was latest casualty, went down and took people, believe it or not, for $38 million. Unbelievable. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044 in Spokane. Outside Spokane, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through our website at coinsplus.com. We always have our previously recorded radio shows there for you to listen to. As I said, you know, we've seen people come and go. We're in the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene area. There was a period of time when this Kevin Mitchell opened up Coin Nuts out here in Coeur d'Alene. And when he was looking to do it, he was hovering around our business a lot. And he tried to kind of mimic us in a lot of ways. And he tried to make his business name look like ours. He actually, for a while, was trying to tell people we're affiliated. And then he went and wrote a lot of bad checks, didn't deliver precious metals. And sadly and frustrating enough, he named his business Coin Nuts, which is, to me, just unbelievable. I've been in business a lot of years. I think professionalism, our motto is, you know, honesty, integrity, and professionalism in every transaction. I can't even imagine coming up with a name like that, but he did. Reason he did it is to make it sound like Coins Plus. He's gone now, but the reason I bring it up is we are still running into people that literally think we're affiliated. And out in the Coeur d'Alene area, which I do tend to frequent, there's a lot of people that think we're affiliated, and it's really frustrating because we've spent 20 years building a reputation for, you know, like I said, honesty, integrity, professionalism, and to end up having to ride on the shirt tails of somebody who did so many people so wrong. He had court judgments against him. The city of Coeur d'Alene dropped the ball on that so bad. They let that just continue on and on, and it's just a sham, and it's a shame is what it is. It's a real shame that, you know, they let him write bad checks for so many years. There's a story behind that, but I won't get into that. It's something that's caused us some discomfort, to say the least, and I just wanted to get that out there. We have customers out in that area. I think a lot of you know. Hopefully you do. If you don't, or if you know someone who doesn't, let them know. Spread the word. I hate to even say that. And the other thing, too, I'd ask, I haven't mentioned it for a while, but we do have a program where if you go online, you know, basically Google or some of the majors, Yahoo and stuff, if you've done business with us or had a positive experience with us, if you go out and you leave us a couple positives out in the cyber world, we thrive on that. It's important to us. You know who we are. You know it matters. It's really hard to get the exposure. Over the two decades we've been in business, we've literally, without exaggerating, have done multiple hundreds of thousands of transactions. You end up with a couple dozen reviews maybe over all those years, and it's not a proper representation of the proportion of positive, happy people. Every once in a blue moon, you get a competitor. For a while, we had a competitor that was trying to sabotage us, which is kind of sad. But basically, if you'd be kind enough to go out, give us a positive review, give us a couple on some major sites, we will give you a nice quality Morgan silver dollar. And you might say, well, how do you do that? That's a bribe. No, it's actually not a bribe. But I'll tell you what, it's pretty interesting when you run a business and you pay for marketing and advertising and you start to actually keep track of how much money you spend on advertising and how many new customers you get. When you basically calculate the amount of money you spend per new customer in a business, it's pretty expensive. And so for us, to be able to have existing customers to go out, put a little testimonial, just explain, you know, a positive experience you had, or, you know, something about, you know, I don't know, people bring in estates or collections or invest with us or, you know, or whatever. And it's important to us. I realize there's people of all types in the world. I realize there's some people that are hard to please. I mean, I've been that person myself now and then. But we really, it's important to us to treat you square and fair and square. How about that? It is. And we just want the word out there. So basically, if you want a nice free Silver Morgan dollar, go online, leave a couple reviews on some of the top areas. Like I said, Google, Yahoo, whatever. So I'm sure y'all, or at least a fair amount of you or some of you, watched the football game yesterday, the Super Bowl. I was a big athlete growing up, and I've drifted away from it because life, the pressures, the consummation of life. But I will tell you, what a game. I mean, it's pretty impressive. Tom Brady's got his fifth Super Bowl under his belt. The comeback was a record comeback. First time Super Bowl's ever gone into overtime. I have a good friend who has worked with Tom Brady and Giselle on a large real estate project. He speaks very highly of them. They're good people. They're humble. If you noticed after the game, Tom Brady's preferred position was prostrate on the ground, praising God for his victory. He is a believer, but he's not. I don't know what you'd call it. He's not an outward proselytizer. He's kind of a good Christian guy that he believes what he believes. He lives what he lives. He lets his actions shine over his words. And we need all types out there. You know, there's the more forthright, publicized type like the Tim Tebows that end up taking the hits from society. And then, you know, Brady, God glorifies him, you know, exalts him, I should say. It says in Proverbs 20, it is not glory to seek your own glory. We should never seek our own glory. We should just seek to glorify God in our lifestyle and our actions. We should just seek to be the best person that we can be. And I think that we've all got, you know, we've talked about the parable of talents. I think that's such an important scripture to me. That's one of the key scriptural points of the New Testament. And I think, you know, you look at his wife, Giselle, and again, like I said, I've got a friend who's worked very closely with them, and his wife said Giselle's absolutely beautiful. She's a model, if you don't know, but she's also the brains in the couple. And so she's a prime example of the parable of talents. She's been given phenomenal beauty, which she uses as a model. She's been given incredible brains and analytical skills, apparently, and she's used that to help them both out. And, you know, obviously Tom Brady's talent is obviously throwing a football, and I'm sure there's more. But it's so important, I think, that each of us finds that core talent. You know, I know there's people out there that worry about what they don't have or think about what someone else has or spends time focusing on what they wish they had. Or thinking, you know, there's a real disease that I think runs in some people's lives, and it's the grass is greener disorder, where I think it's easy to get caught up and think that everybody else has it better than us. But that's not what the Bible tells us to do. The Bible tells us to bloom where we're planted, you know. It tells us to make the most out of what we've been given, the resources, the location. We are where we belong. We don't need to go somewhere else. We don't, you know, the relocation, the Bible's very clear. It says you can travel across the world, basically, and your problems are going to be there right with you. And so it's just important, I think, that everyone realizes that you literally have a destiny. Every human being is bestowed with something incredible. We've all seen people that are handicapped or born, you know, with much less advantage than the average. And then we've seen them rise up and do phenomenal things. And we have to be careful how we measure it. We cannot measure accomplishment by worldly standards. We do not compare ourselves to one another. That is sheer destruction. We compare ourselves to ourselves. You compare yourself today to yourself yesterday. You compare yourself to Christ. And you know, the Bible says that we look to Christ as our example, folks. But think about it. When you look to Christ, it's not a competition. It can't be. You automatically lose. I think you understand. Everything we do should be Christ-like, and it should mimic our Christian walk. So when we look at other people, we shouldn't be in competition with them. We shouldn't be jealous or envious. Jealousy and envy are just the two most destructive emotions you can even imagine. The Bible's so clear about it. It says wrath and anger, you know, is tough, but who can stand against jealousy? The Bible tells us you cannot. We've got to cleanse our lives of jealousy. It's absolutely an intolerable emotion. It's an emotion made only for God, because He is God and we are not. We have to be able to be, as it says in Ephesians 4, I believe, we've got, no unwholesome talk come out of our mouths, but every word needs to be edifying and building up. I'll hit that scripture real quick here. I think it says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. That's what we need to do. We need, you know, we basically want to be an edifier. We want to be a fertilizer. We want to be a waterer. We want to improve situations. And that is an art that it's difficult. We're all made different. I was talking to a good friend yesterday, a gal who I know forever, going to clear back to elementary school, and she's a teacher, and she's got this incredible strong leadership personality. She's very forthright. She really should be, you know, an executive for a big company, but she's chosen to teach, and she's a good teacher. And she doesn't go into administration because she's too, you know, bold and brazen, but not rude. And we were discussing that, and I was talking about my years when I was in banking. I'm very forthright myself, shockingly enough. And I prayed. I spent a lot of time praying to God to make me softer, more diplomatic, more articulate. Over time, he's probably done that. I think he has. But at the same time, he made it clear to me that I was made for a purpose the way I was. And then he showed me multiple situations where I functioned as a catalyst for change, for the better. There were many times where I would be, there's actual circumstances that I can think of where I was one out of 300 people that spoke up and took the energy and the effort to make a difference or defend the downtrodden or whatever. And I was talking to my daughter a while ago about a situation she was dealing with, and I said, you got to stand up for what's right. And she said, Dad, it's not going to change anything for me. I said, no, it won't, but it may for the next guy. And we need to be warriors for justice and truth. Folks, when we have people out there believing that they are warriors for justice and what we call social justice, which is basically a nice word for communism and socialism, we need to be warriors for justice and truth on God's team, on God's side. You have to realize it is a spiritual battle. We know that. We know the Bible is very clear that, you know, it's not just a battle against flesh and blood, that we literally are battling a spiritual battle. And for people who aren't Christians or haven't taken time to study it, that sounds crazy to them. It just doesn't make sense. Again, in Ephesians, where it tells us Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Our real struggle on earth is a spiritual battle. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it isn't there. Part of it is to walk by faith. When you live in faith, and I'll tell you what, over the years, and I was just thinking of this as I was speaking a minute ago when I talked about praying for diplomacy and articulateness, God did grant that to me over time. God granted me faith. After I became a believer, and I'll tell you what, I struggled. My faith was just rocked. I kept going back to this, all this evolution stuff I'd been taught over the years, and I just thought, how can a God who has done everything over 100 billion years, and everything's 100 billion light years apart, and we're one speck in the middle of an ocean of nothing, how can he care? How can it matter? And part of, you know, one of my, probably the greatest challenge was the deception that I'd been fed by, you know, the, I don't know if you want to call it science, but that's really what it is the scientific arena makes us think all these things. Everything that they stand for, they take, it's kind of like they never give God the benefit of the doubt. Why is it that it's easier for people to accept that we came from nothing, for no reason, out of nowhere, completely contrary to all the laws of measurable physics? Why is it easier to believe that than to believe there's a God? And then the new game is that they say, God, the concept of God was created long ago to control people. As a way of control. Well, you know, the concept of God and faith and religion may have some control on people because it may, you know, it may speak to the morality that's built into our hearts. The Bible's very clear that God, you know, the laws of God are written on the hearts of man. It does not matter where you go in the world, and that in man, human beings have, you know, they find the same rules and laws and limitations and regulations for the most part. There's some differences. There's some variances. I've gone over, you know, the 40 commandments of the early Egyptians, the earliest known religious writings. Well, they are the absolute expounding of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are in those 40 commandments. And, of course, they're, you know, recollection is that clear back at the beginning, there was these shepherds that came and took over the kingdom and got Khufu to build the pyramids and, you know, and left behind these commandments, these rules and regs. So just because the religion's been there the whole time and it's consistent throughout history, people look at consistency as conspiracy rather than confirmation. If you think about it, they say, look, you can go back in time and see the parallels in the Virgin Mother, the Virgin Birth, and there has been some very deceptive writings about religion where some expert in the 1800s, you know, claimed that these different religions had all these parallels to modern-day Christianity. And so people say, oh, look, it's just this myth that's carried on. Well, you know, what happens is you always need to go to the original source. So if you go to the original source, you find that the information ultimately goes back to one false writing, and then it generationally got compounded. And I'm kind of giving you the Reader's Digest version there. But there is a lot of writing out there that's very deceptive. And what the information that he provides about these world religions is actually not true. However, there are parallels throughout history that continue through. And that, you know, it's kind of like people say, well, look, if you look at all the creation, you see similarities. They say that's the definition of evolution. No, that's the definition of a common designer. You know, when you see somebody who, you know, creates things, and you'll see repetition. All Apple products look alike. I mean, if you look at Apple products, they all look alike. They're similar. They have a similar designer. If you look at all Ferraris or Maseratis or Mercedes-Benz, they all have a lot of similarity. They're the same designer. And that's what we see in nature. The only thing when it really kind of starts to blow my mind is when you get to the insect world. That's where God went crazy and he built some levels of functionality that are just mind-boggling to me. However, I think it's just important to realize that, you know, spirituality goes way back. We don't know when Christ died exactly what happened, where people literally rose from the grave and walked on the earth and they saw the prophets and they saw the stuff. Were they given an opportunity to be redeemed? Was it because he had the keys to Hades or whatever in his hands and they were released? We aren't sure. We don't know, but we do know that people from the past were obviously given a chance to take a second road on the journey. So those people have their opportunity for redemption themselves, and we all do. But once we are given once we are presented with the concept of Christ, we have a responsibility to God to do the right thing. And so just remember, there is a battle, a spiritual battle. The spirit world's real. You don't have to believe in it for it to be real. There's no doubt. You go all the way back through history, and that's not the best confirmation. The best confirmation is the words of a man who died, was buried. Well, let me step back. Who predicted his death, burial, and resurrection, and then was killed. He predicted the manner in which he'd die, how he'd die, how long he'd be dead, that he'd be raised again, and then he did it. Whenever I struggle with faith or start to kind of wander, I always remember that. And I was saying a minute ago, God's granted many prayers in my life. If you struggle with faith, pray for it. Ask for it. God will grant it to you. He tells us, if we ask, it shall be given. And there's so many scriptures about that. It's very interesting to me that God has made it very clear that, you know, he says, you know, I mean, you look at the Bible and Christ says that what? God knows what you want before you ask him. But then later in Matthew, that's 6 and 7, he says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. It is my belief that if you seek God completely unabridged, unbiased, unbridled, with an open mind, it is my belief you'll find Jesus Christ. When I came to Christ, I had hit a low in my life. I'd been tossed out by my family, unwanted, tough upbringing. Ended up in college just because my friends were going. I had no direction. I just didn't want to miss out on something. Grew up in Montana. Never even took an SAT test. Everyone was going to college. It was late. I was like, holy moly, I'm missing out. Picked up the phone, called the university where friends were going and said, hey, can I get in? They said, you're a resident. You graduate from high school. You're qualified. So I went. Shortly after that, I was introduced to Christ. And I always had this yearning desire to know God. And the actual story was, when I was in third grade, I'd prayed to receive him when I went to this kind of lukewarm Lutheran church, and they had a substitute teacher that shared the gospel, but I'd forgotten all about that. But where I was going with this is, I basically, what had happened was I just, like I said, Reader's Digest version, I'd hit a low. I was, you know, heavily into partying and misbehaving and living a tough life. I was a rough and tumbled street kid that, you know, fought a lot. I was just a tough, tough guy. And I, you know, on the surface, everybody thought I was made of steel and leather, but in, you know, my heart wasn't that way at all. It was the opposite. It was kind of a facade. So I'd hit a point where I was ready to take my life. I was done. I'd had it. I just had failed one time after the next. I'd even gotten arrested for some stupid crime where we were out drinking with friends. And we took a mud or a like a whatever it is, like a doormat, like a rubber rug or whatever from a convenience store and threw it in the back of a friend's pickup, goofing around. Well, they nailed us for theft on that. And all those kinds of things, you know, that kind of stuff was just weighing on me heavy. I know it's a pretty dumb crime when I look back. I probably should have called an attorney, but I didn't. I was too young. But anyway, so I just had hit a low. I was buying, you know, drinking a lot, and I just realized I had no friends. I had a couple situations I got in where I needed friends. Guys who I thought were my friends turned their back, you know, and they just didn't care. They were just, the thing we had in common was partying and being crazy. When I really needed them, they weren't there. I realized my life was empty. So I decided to take my life. I'd even secured a cheap gun at the time for $40. And for some reason, I decided I was going to take my life on a Sunday. Wasn't going to church. And the weirdest thing was I just had this thought. I thought, I heard somewhere that if you commit suicide, you go to hell. And I remember that scared me bad. Don't know why. So I knelt down. I was in my dorm room. I knelt down on my roommate's bed. He wasn't there, obviously. And I had a simple prayer. I said, Lord, if you are God, if you are real, please show me. And I stood back up. And what was weird was when I was growing up, we lived in a part of Montana where we lived in my hometown of Great Falls. There was an area on the Sun River that where we lived near the end of my, before I left or whatever. But it was called they referred to it as Mormon Row or Mormon Valley. There was a lot of Mormons, and I thought Mormonism was the key. And I was convinced Mormonism was the key because I'd seen their lives. They seemed really good on the surface, although I did know a lot of the families that would have, you know, half the kids would behave well and the other half wouldn't. And the ones that didn't a lot of times got sent off and everything. But I just knew, you know, they went to classes before school. They were usually pretty shaped straight. And I just thought that was it. So a little bit later that week, I was getting ready to go, or I think it was a day or two after that, maybe even a day, I was preparing to go drink. I'd just taken a shower in the dorms, came back to my room. A guy came to my door and he said, hey, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. And long story short, he sat down and shared the gospel with me. He gave me what's called the bridge illustration. And he was showing that, you know, we cannot reach God on our own, which he did not need to convince me of. I'd already known I was messed up. And I was asking him, he became a very good friend of mine later, but I was asking him, I said, so what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And he's like, just let me finish. So he had to go through his illustration because he was a master's student in engineering. And by golly, he had to go through the motions. He couldn't stop and just get right to the end. That's what salesmen do, not engineers. And so he said, you know, you got to pray to receive Christ. And I said, cool. You want to do that? He says, I said, yeah. And he said, let's do it. I said, together? He said, yeah. I said, no, man, I'm not going to pray with another man. To me, at the time, that seemed like a really odd interaction with another man. It was kind of like holding hands and sharing poems to me. And I said, no, thanks. I'll do it on my own. So he said, are you sure? I said, yeah, I'm sure. So I prayed to receive Christ that night. And then my life, you know, began to change pretty drastically. I struggled with things. I wasn't one of these instant overnight successes like a lot of people I've heard of. I continued to struggle with things, and I think we all do as humans. I think when people say they don't, I don't completely understand that. But another thing that was really odd was when he was in my room sharing with me in my mind, I kept seeing this guy on the couch in a hoodie with curly dark hair, and I just stuck out in my mind. I don't know what it was. That Friday, I went to a rally. It was Navigators, which is a college campus organization, and when I was at this rally, there was this Todd guy or something. Well, anyway, this guy walked around. I saw him with this guy with the hoodie and the curly hair. And I went up and I said, hey, who are you? And he goes, oh, I'm Todd something. And I said, I saw you, man. I said, I've seen you before. And he goes, yeah, I was in the main floor of your dorms praying when Glenn was sharing with you. And I'm like, well, that's weird, because I kept seeing a vision of you or something, and you didn't say much. And then after that, I didn't see the guy. And a week or two later, I asked people, I go, who was that guy? And Glenn told me, he said, he just showed up here out of the blue. He said he was involved with Navigators at another campus. He showed up out of the blue, said he wanted to kind of participate in the evangelism. They'd go door to door through the dorms. And he said he just wanted to participate. So he sat and he said he would pray while they walked around the dorms. So that's what happened. And then he left, and no one knew who he was or where he came from or why he was there or where he went. No one knew anything. He just showed up, prayed. I don't know if it was an angel or what, but it's pretty cool. But my point is that when I said to God, if you're real, show me, and I meant it, he did. He showed me Christ, and it wasn't Mormonism. Nothing against the Mormons per se. I mean, obviously there is, and I don't agree. I believe that Christ is sufficient and all that. I know there's Mormons that listen to the show. But the point is, Christ is the way. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. I do know Mormons that are saved, and I know plenty that aren't. it was that for me, because of the outward works, I thought that was the secret way to heaven. But now we know that in Ephesians 4:29, it says, I think it's 4:29, or maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, it says, for we are saved, maybe it's 2:19. For we're saved by faith, saved by grace and faith, not by works. And it's our faith that saves us, but that allows God, it's Ephesians 2:8, it allows God to work through us and speak to us and draw us near to him, is we have to step out in faith. We don't get to see it. It's a really weird concept why God did it this way. I don't know. I do believe that it's because God wants us in heaven with him by choice. You know, he doesn't want to force us at all. It says that his greatest will is that we'll be saved, but it's critical to him that we enter into eternity with him by choice, complete choice. If he gives us too much evidence, we don't have a decision. It's obvious. It's logical. It's like, well, there it is. It's, you know, there's nothing to deny. It's a fact. It's no longer a choice. He wants us to choose the life. He wants us to choose to submit our will to him. He wants us to choose him for the right reasons through faith. And I think that's hard for us to comprehend. Why does God allow bad things to happen? Well, 98% of the bad things to happen that we're talking about are not caused by God. They're caused by other men. The other 2% is acts of nature, acts of disaster, catastrophe. Not only is this earth falling apart, and, you know, we all face death, folks. We just don't know when, where, how, why, you know? And just because someone dies earlier than we think they should, from our perspective, it's a tragedy. But ultimately, what happens is they just went where we're all heading earlier than we did. It's not as tragic as we make it out to be. Don't get me wrong. It hurts. It aches. It's sad to lose a loved one. Trust me, I know. Been there, done that. But when bad things happen, that in our standards, bad to us is not bad to God. Good, you know, when we, it's interesting in the Bible how it talks about, count it all joy, my brethren, when you suffer and go through trials and tribulations and struggles. To God, that's the high calling. That's what it's all about. That's what's important to him for us. That is his will for our lives, is that we struggle and grow and gain discipline and become better people. Not that we get to hang out on a beach somewhere and get everything our way. You know, why God this and why God that? You know, socialism. Socialism is trying to put a Band-Aid on reality. It's trying to give everybody something for nothing and make it all better. But the fact of the matter is, Bernie Sanders was proposing here recently that everyone in America gets a $13,000 check per year just for being a human being. That's not going to make anything better. That's going to set a new baseline. The whole concept that that's going to somehow make it all better, no. It just means that that first $13,000 of everybody's money is worthless because everybody becomes equal and the cost of living will go up another $13,000 per year per person. That's just the way economics works. And, you know, and they want socialism is replacing God and reality with man's concocted system. I'm not saying charity is not good or right at all. We need to be charitable. But the government is not a charity. To take one person's money and give it to another is theft, like it or not. The Robin Hood concept that has been glorified and deified in our society for so long is a deceptive, unbiblical lie. The Bible is very clear. God blesses who he wants to bless, curses those who deserve it. He gives to one and takes from another. The Bible's clear about that. Even Solomon, the richest, wisest man ever, said, you know, from our perspective, it looks ridiculous. It looks vain. It makes no sense. It's sad. It's straining. It's confusing. But it's life. It's the way God made it. None of it matters. What matters is that we make the most out of what we've been given. People who chase riches end up the most miserable people that you can imagine. It says riches are a fleeting vapor that they take up wings, it says, like an eagle and fly away. Is that not true? It just goes and goes and goes. What's enough? The concept that Obama said, no man should make over $250,000 a year, even though he now was up to, you know, $400,000 a year as president, and then somehow mysteriously became net worth of $60 million in his 8 years as president just because of really good investments, you know. So all of a sudden, it's do what I say, not what I do. But for him to say that $250,000 should be the cap, anything over that should be taxed at 100%, and he believed it, was wrong. It was saying, you know, I can live a lifestyle I'm comfortable with at this level. Now, folks, don't misunderstand me. I'm not sitting here saying, you know, I make crazy money or that you should or, you know, but the point is, I know you're not making $250,000 a year. That's not the point. The point is that nobody should say what someone else's lifestyle should be. Everyone's driven different. Every single person has a completely separate drive system. And the problem is when somebody is maybe a progressive liberal philanthropist and say material things don't matter, accomplishment does not matter to them, business doesn't matter, success doesn't matter. Fine, that's you. Another guy, that may be the exact set of talents that God gave him. It's very interesting that God says to us in Proverbs 3, and this is really tricky because it says, whom the Lord loves, well, he basically, I could go back and back and back. Well, let's just do this. It will be healing your body, blah, blah, blah. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. There's a situation where God blesses financially. My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father corrects his son in whom he delights. Folks, do not feel bad when you go through struggles. This is what God does for those he loves. He's making you better, stronger. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her profit, wisdom and understanding, for her profit is better than the profit of silver and her gain better than fine gold. She's more precious than jewels and nothing you desire compares with her. But then watch what comes next. This reminds me of where Solomon said, I want wisdom to help the people. God said, because you asked for wisdom to help the people and not for riches, I'm going to give you both wisdom and riches. So what comes after this where God tells us how precious wisdom and understanding is, more precious than anything else. The next thing he says is, long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. So he says, when you get wisdom and understanding, you're going to have a long, good life, a rich life, a valuable life, a life of insight. And you know, wisdom and understanding just helps you to really enjoy the journey. If you've ever traveled or gone on tours, you know, a really good tour guide is amazing. And my wife and I have been all over the world. Love to travel. Going to be going here soon and anytime soon. Israel, we have an incredible guide there through Calvary Chapel. Ken Ortiz has known this Ronnie Simon forever. The guy's like a captain or a general in the Mossad. He's got a PhD in Israeli history. When we would go to these you know, sites of interest, the other tour guides would stop and tell their people to listen to our tour guide because he's so seasoned and knowledgeable and respected. When you go on a tour like that, a great tour guide makes it incredible. It makes the journey phenomenal. It makes the journey great, right? Well, so does wisdom and understanding make your journey on this earth that great, okay? Because you become a knowledgeable tour guide. You know where you're going, what you're doing, how you're doing it, why you're doing it. You have insights no one else does. You have God's wisdom. That is what being here is all about. With his wisdom comes everything else. He does say it gives you, like I said, long life is in her right hand. And in Hebrew, the word for long life is orek, which means of quality, of it, physical richness. It's long, it's wide, it's fat, it's thick, it's full. It's fullness is the word. A full life. And he says, in her left hand are riches and honor. You know, that. I mean, I'm not even remotely preaching health and wealth. The reason I need to talk about this is because I'm in the world of money, and I've just been baffled at some of the perspectives I run into. Folks, the way people manage their money is foolishness. It's just foolishness. It really is, to me, sad. I've spent years, God has been gracious to me to have, you know, put me into the financial arena. Those of you who know me know I've been in banking for years. I've been Series 6 and 7 licensed, which is the ability to sell and evaluate stocks and bonds and equities, and I've been insurance licensed, and I have a, you know, a bachelor's degree in actuarial science, which is the probability of insurance, you know, statistics for insurance companies, and I've got a strong post-collegiate, postgraduate economics research, and on, plus business ownership, which I learned most about that as a banker. But God's put me in this financial arena. There's a lot I know about finances. If you have questions, feel free to call too. But I'm telling you, a lot of you are sitting out there with 401ks and IRAs. You're just sitting there rotting. You're watching them bounce around. Get out of that. Get in. Give us a call at 444-0044. Let us help you. Let us build a portfolio and get you moving in the right direction. The direction of the country, the direction of the world, economically, financially, folks, it has not changed. Donald Trump is trying what he can. He may stimulate the economy. The problem is he's got a weak dollar philosophy to enhance trade. He's up against a ton of friction. It's going to be a long 4 years. But, you know, we're still going to see a lot of financial chaos and mayhem. We're just going to have a real tough captain at the stern during the ride. But you need, you know, people just struggle with managing their money. They don't know how to borrow. They borrow too much. They get credit card debt. I know a lot of you out there are debt-free or seeking to be debt-free. That's important. I'll tell you one other piece of advice. Many of you have maybe fixed-term mortgages or fixed-term loans. That means you have a fixed payment over a certain period of time. And you'll prepay on it. I was talking to a friend the other night, $2,000 mortgage, and they pay $300 more a month on it. And I said, don't do that. The rate's like 3.25%. She said, why? I said, because real inflation's higher than that, folks. You need to understand the consumer price index is an artificial index. It does not, it's an exclusionary index. It does not include food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs, which is what you spend 85% of your disposable income on to live, unless you're rich. Then it's a smaller percentage. But that's the average American's percentage. And it gives us an artificial indicator of inflation. It tells us inflation's 1.5% or whatever. No, inflation's 6 or 7. So if you have a 3.5% mortgage, your mortgage rate is lower than real inflation. Plus, if you pay extra, it goes to principal, not interest. You don't get tax write-off on that. I say save the money next to or in addition to your debt. I don't say blow it. I say save it. There's a number of reasons. You prepay your debt. And then what happens when you have an emergency? You don't have any money in the bank. You rack it up on your credit card again. And you're back to where you began. I say save the money. And then you have a buffer. Or if you save it long enough and well enough and you decide you need something later, a vehicle breaks down, you need a new one, or whatever it may be, you can have a substantial amount of seed capital to feed into whatever that need may be to reduce, you know, your situation. Simple as that. You can always, if you save the money alongside the debt, you can always apply it to the debt later. But if it's a fixed term debt, once you put the money on it, you can't get it back out. Now, on the other hand, if you save, I say save in metals. Come in every month. Buy silver, buy gold, buy some coins, will help you out. Get something that's going to grow and grow and grow over time. Folks, the precious metals market has always continued to return to its previous highs. Silver was almost $50 just a few years back, and gold was pushing almost $2,000. Gold's around 12 something. Silver's almost, you know, silver's up to almost 18. Gold's, you know, 12 and a quarter or whatever it is. But there's, you know, for gold to go back to its previous high alone is a 70% gain. That can happen by the end of the year. For silver to go back to its previous high is a minimum of, you know, 150% gain. But it continues to cycle to the highs and the lows. Now we are coming out of a lull. The paper market's inflated beyond. I've talking to friends that are looking to invest lately, do not touch the paper markets. Again, I talked about the Consumer Price Index, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. When people say, how's the market? What they really mean is what the Dow do today. The Dow, too, is an artificial index. They literally remove and replace stocks on a regular basis every month or quarter, and then they use a weighted moving average. So if you had the same stocks, you'd be taking hits, you'd be taking losses when they're showing no loss at all. But the paper market is overinflated. If you want to be a good steward, you follow and obey what God's told us about precious metals based. I always say precious metals based assets. I used to say gold, and then people wanted just gold. It's the entire sector. Trust me. Mike was talking to a gal here a little bit ago. We spoke to a gentleman who wanted to, he invested $100,000. We talked to him about a balanced portfolio. He came in early to get it, wasn't ready yet. It had only been a day or so, and his wife was with him, and she hadn't spoken to us. And she says to him, do you expect me to just let you to just, she says, do you expect us to just trust you with what we should do with our money? And like he said to her, he said, well, in this business, would you rather trust us, who've been doing this successfully for 20 years, or yourself? I mean, obviously, we're good at it. We've been doing it a while. I don't mean to be arrogant, but obviously, we're good at what we do. We're honest and sincere about it, folks. The one thing, if you don't know this arena, this business, the one thing Coins Plus offers you that no one else does is we offer you the best service, the best knowledge, the most honest information at the best wholesale pricing. There are companies abound. Folks, people live and die out there in this industry by marketing and solicitation, by selling you items at big markups. That what's hard for me is to explain that to you and have you have enough common sense to understand that if I'm revealing that about other companies, you're safe with us. Some people are narrow enough that they hear that and they say, well, I'll just stay out of it. Well, I'm the one that's the one, you know, I offer the product and I'm also offering the warning. I'm not saying, hey, we, you know, Coins Plus good, everybody bad. But I'm telling you, we offer honest wholesale trades, you know, and we're good. We've got good material, good knowledge, good experience. We build awesome portfolios. We not only do we deal in precious metals, we deal in, you know, a lot of different investment products. People don't understand the brevity of our industry and the opportunities that exist. It's pretty profound. And it's a lot more in-depth than you think. And there's things that are good to have and things that are bad to have. We are not into exotic. I mean, I'll tell you candidly, you know, the markets change. And over the long haul, there are certain collectibles that last and certain that don't. If you are into collecting old cars, there are cars that come and go. Okay, there was a period of time when my father was a certain age that the Model A and the Model T was the hottest thing going. Then after that, and then they, you know, they went up to 25, 30 grand, and now you can get one for $3,000-$4,000. There was the, you know, the generation that wanted the 57 Chevy Bel Air. They got up to 100 and some thousand, and now they're back down to 20, 30 grand. Right now, the hottest thing that was going was my generation that, you know, when they were in high school, the cool car was the 67 through 71 Camaros, Firebirds, things like that. Those things are up over $100,000. Now they're coming back down. Okay. It's the same with any investment vehicle. And I don't mean vehicle as in car. Those things also happen. We know in coins, but there are items that does not happen to that just continuously climb and climb and climb and climb. There's certain kinds of type coins. There's Carson City silver dollars. Folks, just generic silver dollars have proven to be such a terrific investment. And those of you who deal with us know we put those in our portfolios. They're awesome. As metals, you know, are climbing slowly, the premiums on those climb more aggressively over time. But when metals were real high, the premium on the silver dollars was pretty close to the metals price. And now as silver has come down a little bit, now it's coming back up, of course. But the generic silver dollars in bulk, they carry a premium over and above that continues to increase. Why? Because there's only so many out there. Everyone knows what they are. The demand always exists. It's not going to change, period. Not going to change. And you think, well, how do I know that someone's going to want this down the road? Folks, we've got thousands of years of history people don't realize in numismatic coin performance. Precious metals is a no-brainer. God, you know, he created it. He said to use it, starting in Genesis chapter 2. He used it in his temple. He said it's all over heaven. It was the first gift he gave to his son on earth, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. You know, like I said, the second temple of Solomon was it. Second chapter of Genesis, he tells us where to go get it, etc. The economy starts, gold and silver was money till about 40 years ago when, you know, good old America messed it up with the Keynesian economic system, which was designed to destroy it because they can't have people having true wealth if they want to impose socialism globally. And then God it goes as far as to tell us in multiple occasions in the Bible that on the final day of wrath, the last day of standing, that people will cast their gold and silver in the streets because it is of no value when it comes to the wrath of God, when you are being judged, when justice lands, it won't buy salvation. It's, you know, it's got a physical component, but not a spiritual. So some people say, you know, do not build treasures on earth, but build treasures in heaven. And so people say, well, that means you need to be flat broke. No, I don't think that means that. I just read where it says, with wisdom and understanding comes riches and honor. That's not what it means. It means don't be materialistic. Don't grind your fingers to the bone to make money while neglecting your spiritual life and your spiritual walk. You need to be doing things, good things. Your focus needs to be on spiritual. That's the point. the Bible's very clear about what to do financially. Even Christ used gold and silver, the little mentions we've got. He disregarded fiat currency with Caesar on it. And that's our system, folks, is so broken. You can't even imagine how broken it is. You can't even fathom it, because as humans, just as I spoke a couple shows ago, where children are raised in a certain environment and they know what they know and they accept it, and that's a sad shame with the Islamic, scourge covering the earth. We as humans are the same line. We have fiat currency in our system, and we accept that as a baseline acceptable. We call it money. It's not money. It's not wealth. It's toilet paper with a promise from a private bank that cares neither about you nor me. The Federal Reserve is not federal, and there's no reserves. It's an absolute scandal. It's a way to fleece you of your wealth. The only way out of that is to get your finances into those items which God has biblically attributed as true wealth. Those are gold and silver, and these are sectors. Remember this: gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones. That's where true wealth lies. Now, you can buy Rolex watches. There's nothing wrong with that if you know what you're doing. But that's precious stones. It's gold. It's whatever. It's in that compact wealth arena. I collect them myself. It's part of my investment portfolio. Hard assets, compact hard assets, and real estate. That's where it's at. So let Coins Plus, you can get them in your 401k and IRA. You can put them in your savings account. You just need to call. Tell us you want us to build your portfolio. We guarantee you, you're going to have a strongly performing, honestly priced, best portfolio, the same stuff we give our closest relatives. That's our philosophy here. All you got to do is call Coins Plus 444-0044, outside the area, toll free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website coinsplus.com, where our previously recorded radio shows exist. You can also email us and we'll get back to you. But we like to talk on the phone. It's easier that way. So feel free to call. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6:30, Saturdays 10 to 3:30. We're always here, and we're doing the same thing. And if you got stuff to sell, give us a call. Come on in, whatever. But thanks, as always, for tuning in. Take care. God bless. We will be back Wednesday. Bye-bye.